Mr. Edwards, Real 3. We're talking about your training with 53rd Training Regiment, Royal Armour Corps at Catterick Camp. The next thing was the signal, well, wireless
training.
How did they set about training you as a wireless operator?
Well, we had an instructor, a corporal, who was very good, and it was mostly classroom to start with. We had 2 or 3 weeks of classroom. Some of it was telling us about things like batteries and the principles of wireless sets. And Morse code. So just about every morning we had a Morse code session, and sometimes in the afternoon.
So what was it like? What was the Morse code?
We'd tap away on a little key which sounded like Morse code, and we had to read what he was tapping out. And you know, in the army they weren't supposed to preach or talk about politics, and all his Morse code came off the Daily Worker, which is all communist talk, so he was a member of the Communist Party. So we did a lot of Morse code, and
how did you take to it? Because not everyone takes to Morse, and you just guessed when you passed the test for it.
Yeah, well, I was slow at picking up Morse, actually, but by the end of the six weeks I was reading 8 words a minute, which was what you had to do. And 8 words a minute is fairly slow, but that's the standard they got you up to after the 6 weeks.
And did you ever actually use that?
No.
What was the next thing of your training?
Well, also during the training, of course, they taught you the wireless set, which you had to learn quite
a
bit.
Which set were you learning?
19 set.
Can you tell us about the operation of the 19 set?
Well, to start with, there was a meter on it, and you could turn a knob to different settings to read the meter to check all the various parts of the set, and in case there was anything wrong you were taught how to isolate the fault. And you had actually a box full of spare valves. It was a valve set, and there were 15 valves in it altogether, and you had a box full of 15 spare valves, so you could repair the faults if there were any. And then you had to learn how to net into the squadron net or the regimental net.
How did you do that?
Well, the headquarters station, the squadron leaders, in this case, wireless operator, would tap out a Morse signal. That's the only Morse we used to do, was used to tap out a signal on the Morse, which we were told about beforehand. And we tuned our set into Morse signal. We had to get the maximum volume, maximum dip on the meter.
By dip, you mean movement to the right?
Yeah, well, I can't remember now, but the meter used to move when you got the signal at its maximum strength, and you got the maximum movement on the knee. We call it maximum dip, so it must have been dipping back. And we got maximum dip on the needle, and we had to lock. We could lock it on the frequency then. And you tuned your aerial as well. I can't remember all the details. I still got my old notebook as it happened somewhere, with the details in, but you had to tune the aerial in as well for a particular frequency.
And what about voice procedure? Did you learn that?
Oh, we learned all the procedures, yeah.
Do you remember anything about it?
Not
a
lot. I
know it's a long time ago.
Not a lot. But, hello, so and so. You gave your station number, hello, Baker 4, for instance. Then you gave your message, and at the end you'd say, Roger, or Wilco, as the case may be. Actually, it was just Roger, but then they changed it. When the Americans joined us, they changed the procedure a bit, and they changed the phonetic alphabet, and they changed the procedure, so you had Wilco out, and it used to be Roger over all the time, I think, but then when they came in, it was Roger over or Wilco out. Will come in, and you would comply with the order, whatever it was.
Did the phonetic alphabet, was it helpful?
Oh, it was, yes, it was great. I mean, I can't remember what it was now. I mean, it used to start at, originally it was Ack Baker, Ack Beer, Charlie Dog, something like that. But they changed it when the Americans came in. I think whether it was possibly the phonetic alphabet we were using or a compromise, I don't know, but they changed a lot of it when they came in. So we all had to learn something different.
Anything else on signals you're learning?
Well, after 2 or 3 weeks in classroom, we started going out in the little cars then on schemes, talking to one another for over a distance out on schemes, and somebody would be the HQ and he'd give you orders to go to a certain place and you'd be reading the map and telling the driver where to go, and which was all right. It was a change from being in the classroom.
Anything else, or was that it? Wow,
that's
signal.
That's more or less all I can remember.
Now, what about your gunnery training? Tell me about that.
Well, gunnery was mostly in the classroom again. They had guns in the classroom set on mountings.
Which guns?
To start with, the 2-pounder and the Beezer. Now, the Beezer was a nice machine gun, and we soon learned about that. And the 2-pounder, we used to practice loading and stripping it and all that. And those are the only guns we learnt.
Are they?
Yeah. Because the 6-pounders, they had 6-pounders in tanks, but they were only just coming in. They hadn't got a 6-pounder where we were at the 53rd Training Regiment.
What did you think of the 2-pounder?
Well, I thought it was great, but I mean, we thought it was marvellous at the time, but of course it was only puny when we for action purposes.
Was it easy to load and fire?
Oh, it was easy. You could do rapid fire like a machine gun with it. It's the rounds are so small, yeah. It was easy to fire because it was shoulder controlled, oil traverse and shoulder controlled, and you can bring it spot on to any target. And the rounds were only small, about this big, so you could skim them and you can nearly do like a machine gun on it. So firing was very good. We didn't actually fire it, but you practice firing it.
But what about the Beezer machine gun? Because you didn't use that for a while. Well, I mean, what about the Beezer? What was that like? Why was it good?
Well, it was very, very strongly made, very heavy, very strongly made. That's it. The Beezer was a nice strong gun. I'm saying that from later use when I did use it in Germany.
Was that it for your gunnery training?
No, because we had mock turrets and we used to practice, and they had sand tables, and we used to practice with trees and little trees and houses and things on. We used to practice being brought onto the target, somebody giving orders and somebody else bringing the gun round onto the various targets. And that's all I can remember, stripping the guns and practicing things like that. And then they had a machine gun range in the camp, and we did a one morning anyway on the Beezers, firing the Beezers on this machine gun. We fired from these mock turrets so that you felt as if you're in a tank where somebody was loading and somebody was firing the guns. So I have to tell you a little story about the machine gun range. There was a sergeant in charge who just did the machine gun range. And there's a naffy in the camp, and we were allowed 20 minutes break in the morning to go to the naffy for a cup of tea and a bun. And the 20 minutes, it wasn't very long, because you had to walk there and walk back, and you had to queue up when you were there, so you used to have about 5 minutes for your cup of tea and a bun. So this sergeant let us go early. He must have wanted an early break himself, and he let us go about 10 minutes or more early. So we all went off to the canteen, had our tea and a bun. Now, we were all hungry. It was winter time and there was no heat on anywhere, so we were always very hungry. But we were rationed to 2 buns in this naffy canteen. So, and you couldn't go round twice, there wasn't time. And also there was a warrant officer who used to march up and down inside the canteen, keeping everything in order. Not that we did disorderly, but he used to keep everything in order. And he was a real hefty bloke, nasty looking man with a big stick with silver ends on it. And I had my tea and a bun, and I went off to the toilet, and I came back and I looked in the canteen to look at the clock to see what time it was, and I thought, oh, I've got time to go round again. And the warrant officer had his back to me, walking away from me, so I thought, right, so I stepped forward boldly to try and get on the end of the first queue, the 3 queues, before he turned round. Well, before I got there, he turned round and, right, have you just come in? Yes, sir. What wing are you? Gunnery, sir. Right, he said. He gave me a hand on the jacket like that. And he hauled me up the queue. About a third from the front, he stuck his big stick in there. He'd leave it a gap and he pushed me in and said, get in there. I said, some of these buggers are going down twice, you know. that was the machine gunnery range. And that's more or less what I remember of the gunnery. And after the 4 weeks, we started the driving and maintenance.
Now, what about driving and maintenance training? Well, if we start with driving, could you drive?
No. The first week was theory in the classroom, the theory of the workings of the car and the gearbox and things, of the truck anyway, it was trucks. And then that's for 1 week, and then the 2 weeks after that was driving instruction on 1500 weight trucks.
And how did you take to that?
Not very well. It was a struggle.
Was it because they had different gearings?
Partly because it was double D clutching, not like modern. It was all double D clutching and hand signals. So you were sort of waving your arm, one arm out of the window, giving signals while you were trying to change gear with the other, and you didn't have enough hands for the job. And also, they didn't have white lines down the middle of the road then, or at least if they did, you couldn't see them because of the mud from all the tanks and that. I don't think they had white lines. When I was driving along, and if something was coming the other way, which wasn't very often, but if something came the other way, I couldn't gauge whether I was in the right position or not. I used to look out of the corner of my eye at the instructor. If it was going like this, ready to grab the wheel, I knew I had to come over a bit. But if it looked calm enough, then I knew I was okay. And then we had night driving. Well, night driving them days was horrible because everywhere was absolutely, completely dark. And we were driving over the moors, and the roads were covered with mud. You couldn't see where the moor ended, the road ended, and the moor began. You were just following the tail lamp of the one in front, and the tail lamps were very dim. So the night driving was hopeless, well, very difficult. But I did the driving, but I didn't enjoy it. And I was glad when I got on leave and got on my pushback. I thought, this is a lot easier.
Was it just lorries, or did they put you onto track vehicles?
No, just in my case, just 1500 weight trucks. No, some blokes were going to be drivers. They were called driver mechanics, or just drivers, and they were, no, just drive, some, sorry, driver mechanics, or driver gunners, and the driver gunners were going to be co-drivers, and the driver mechanics were going to be first-class drivers, and so they went, I don't know if they started on trucks or what, but they certainly did a lot of tank driving.
Now what about maintenance?
They taught you a little bit of simple maintenance, but it was just a matter of draining the water off at night. It was just water in the radiator. You would drain the water off at night and fill it up again next morning before you set off. They taught you a few simple things, but I can't remember what they were. Nothing that made much difference.
And any other training you did with 53rd?
No.
How long were you there for? You got there in about November.
I got there beginning of November and left at the end of March. Almost 5 months.
And how did you get on with the instructors there? How did you find them there? You liked them at Satan, almost, except the PT ones. But
I didn't dislike them, but they just had these screaming high-pitched voices, and it used to be a bit annoying. I thought perhaps I'll keep fit and do them a lot of good. The instructors, I thought, were very good, yes, very good. The wireless instructor, the gunnery instructor, the driver, they were all first class, I thought. In fact, the wireless instructor, because I showed a bit of interest and a bit of knowledge on some pH values and things like that, he said, we've got to watch out for potential instructions. Would you like to be an instructor, go on an instructor's course? And I said, no, thank you very much.
So, no, why not? Because that would have kept you safe.
I wanted to be a tank crew, and that was it. I wasn't interested in stopping behind and being an instructor. I'm struggling with a course and not necessarily passing it, you see, so I thought I'll stay where I am. There's another little thing about that as well at Catterick. When we were on the general training to start with, we used to do a drill very often, and we used to have two sergeants drilling us. One was Sergeant Young and the other one was Sergeant Young will now demonstrate, and he'd try to crack the concrete, and we were all supposed to try and crack the concrete. Anyway, 5 minutes to every hour, used to stop for a smoke, so all those who smoked used to get the dog end out and have a puff or two for 5 minutes. And while this was going on, I looked over and the sergeant got about three or four blokes, four blokes clustered round him, was telling them something. And I said, what's going on there? Well, he said, he's just asked for all those who've been to secondary school. Oh, I said, I was one. So I walked over and I tried to muscle in on the group. And they saw me looking, trying to muscle in, and they said, you, bugger off. So what he was actually telling them was how to apply to go before the selection board for a possible commission. So I missed the commission as well, which I wouldn't.
Why do you think he told you to? I mean, you've been to
He didn't know. He thought I was just muscling in on the group, you see, because he got these four there and he was starting to tell them what was what. And when he saw me there, he must have thought I was nauseating. So buggered off, he said. So I buggered off, and that's how I never applied for a commission.
Would you have wanted to?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. It's not my scene, that.
Anything else about your time at Catterick? I mean, would you go out in the evening there, or...? It's a big camp, isn't it?
It's a big camp. Oh, you didn't go out in the evening. There was only the naffy and nothing else. On a Saturday afternoon, we were allowed out. And a gang of maybe half a dozen of us sometimes used to go to into Richmond. There was a cinema there, and there was a canteen of some sort. There wasn't much to do. We used to have a wander around, go to the canteen, maybe go to the cinema, and sometimes we walked home all the way from, which was a tidy walk, from Richmond back to the camp. Oh, and there's something else at the 53rd. We used to have a white lanyard on our shoulders to show that you belonged to the 53rd. And a few hundred yards up the road was the 60th Training Regiment, and they had a black lanyard. And if your white lanyard looked a bit off white, the sight say, you're in the wrong bloody regiment, you belong up there in the 60th, you see. It was all good fun.
So you finished in March?
The end of March, just before Easter. I don't
43.
Know. 43. I don't know when Easter was, but I was transferred to the Fife and Pulford at the end of March.
So that's when you went to. And where were they when you joined them?
They were at a place called Chippenham, near, which is about 5 miles from Newmarket. I don't know which county it's in.
And you were joined the second.
Second, fourth, yeah.
And did you know anything about them, you know, when you joined them?
No, nothing.
What did you think? Because you must have known they were Scottish, I suppose.
Oh, I knew they were Scottish. While we were at Catterick waiting to be posted, every day they went, lists went up on the orders for the regiment, telling the regiments they were going to, you see, and there were nice signing regiments like the 13th, 18th Hussars and the 15th, 19th Hussars, and some 24th Lancers, and 4th, 7th Dragoon Guards, and that was popular because it was in Yorkshire. They said, oh, you know, not far from home. Anyway, when ours came up, 2nd, 5th and 4th for you, and we thought, what the hell is that? And we asked around some of the staff NCOs, and they'd never heard of it. So we thought, oh, God, what are we going to? But anyway, we had a nightmare journey down to it. Only half a dozen of us went there on my batch.
What was so bad about the journey?
Well, it was a train from, I think, Darlington all the way down to wherever you get out, I don't know where it was, wherever you get off for Newmarket. And the train was absolutely jam-packed with mostly civilians, and we were sort of pushing at Darlington. They used to have MC men, movement control people at stations who knew what the trains were and what you had to get onto. And they pushed us onto this train, and we were in a saloon, in the passageway of a saloon, with all our heavy gear on, big pack, small pack, and kit bag, and we couldn't move, and there was nowhere to sit, and we were just stuck in this gangway all the way down to... Nobody got off because it was a non-stop train.
So what happened when you got to Chippenham? What was your reception?
Well, Chuck picked us up at Newmarket Station and took us to... we had to get another train to get to Newmarket, now I come to think. A truck picked us up at Newmarket and took us to the regiment. And I can't remember much about the reception, but the regiment, most of the regiment was out on schemes. So there was only like a skeleton crew there.
And what were you put in?
I was put in number 4 troop, B squadron. And did I say 6 of us went?
Yep.
There were 4 really. 4 of us, and we were all put in a different squadron. So we used to meet in the canteen at morning break time, in the cafe, in the naffy rather, at morning break time, and have a chatter, and we said, oh God, it's not much of a place this, is it? Because there was nobody about, and there's nothing, you know, they were just finding bits of jobs for you here and there. Anyway, that a few days later, it was weekend, and the squadron came in off the scheme for Easter church parade on the Sunday. So the squadron came in and sort of things were a bit different then, but it was a bit strange because there was just me in this hut to start with by myself, and then all the squadron came in, and of course they're all strangers now. I was a stranger amongst all the others.
How did you fit in with it? Because I mean, what was the proportion of Scottish English? Because they'd originally been Scottish.
Oh, yes. Well,
they were not so much Scottish.
No, when I joined, it was something like about 3/4 Scottish. But then a lot more English joined after me.
How did you get on with the Scots? And more to the point, perhaps, in that, how did they get on with you? I mean,
well, we seemed to get on quite well. I never had any bother in that respect. We seemed to just fit in and get on and got on.
Could you understand them? I mean, I'm not being rude.
Yes.
Because the accent was stronger in them days.
Yes, I can understand them. They came in off the scheme for the weekend, went back in off onto the scheme after the weekend, and I was still there, but then there must have been a vacancy on the tank, because after about 3 or 4 days later, I was sent up to join the scheme. And I went up at night in a truck, a supply truck, and it was about midnight when we got there. They were harboured hidden in a wood. And I got off the truck and I thought, where the hell do I go? Anyway, there's a sergeant, the troop sergeant was waiting there, and he said, Ed was here, so he showed me where to put my bedding roll down in the bivvy and tied to the side of the tank. He said, there you are, you'll be all right there. And I was in the crew, and once you're in the crew, you're not so bad, because then you get to know the chaps in the crew, and you get to know the rest of the troop. And
now, tell me, who was your first? I don't know whether you remember the names of your first crew. You were going to be the operator gunner.
No, I was a gunner. It was a Crusader, £6 Crusader. I was a gunner. Pat Kettridge was the wireless operator. The driver was Henderson, Ginger Henderson. Well, we call him Ginger, I can't remember his first name. Oh, Alex Henderson. We called him Ginger because he got red hair. And now the sergeant, I don't know his name, but he was elderly, he was about 40, and he'd been a regular.
And how did you get on with these lads?
Great, because Pat Kettridge, he'd been in about 6 or 9 months longer than I. Oh no, he'd been there about 6 months longer than I had, and he was sort of told me what was what, and it was all right, yeah.
And what about the Crusader? What did you think of the Crusader?
Oh, I liked it. I don't think it would have been much good fighting the Germans in Normandy, for instance. But I liked the Crusader. It was fast and comfortable, and you could aim the gun very easily. It was shoulder controlled and an oil traverse.
Which gun was it?
It was a £6 gun, and Beezer. We never fired them, of course.
Right, so the sergeant would be in the turret.
Yeah.
Poking at the top. Gunner in the turret as well, and a wireless operator as well.
Yeah.
That was Pat Kettridge.
Yeah.
And then your driver was Ginger.
Ginger Henderson.
And would they have a co-driver?
Oh, no, not on the Crusader, no.
And did you get close to that crew over the first, straight away, or was that a later thing, getting close to the crew?
Well, you're on the scheme, so you're all sleeping together, cooking together, washing together, and everything else together. So you soon seem to get on. No trouble at all.
And what was the scheme then? What sort of exercise was it?
Just troop training and squadron training. It was a large area, which I'm not sure, it was near Thetford, I can only think, it might have been called Thetford Forest, but there was a very large area of very sandy soil and lots of trees and plantations and that, and we used to just manoeuvre around them and fight other troops and fight other squadrons and things like that. But
how realistic do you think it was, given your later knowledge?
I don't know, it's difficult to say. Not all that realistic, but I mean, you have to be able to aim. The driver had to be able to follow his orders of where to go, and the commander had to know how to steer the tank around to where he wanted it and take cover and give his orders, and the troops to take their orders. So it was all, it was reasonable, decent training, but not necessarily 100% realistic. But I don't think there's any training that's 100% realistic for fighting, because the fear isn't there for one thing, and there's no enemy fire coming over.
Now, after a while, you would go back to Chippenham, I presume.
Yes, but this was April and May, and nearly all the time we were out on schemes. We didn't spend a lot of time in camp. We'd come back in camp for a few days and then set out on some other scheme or other.
All in the Thetford area, that was?
All in that area. Part of it, some scheme was on the, what was called, I think it's called the Stamford, and it was the Brandon battle area, or the Stamford battle area. There was a battle area there where the artillery could fire the guns, and we had a scheme on there once, with the artillery firing. I can't remember much about it.
So what about when he did get back to camp, sort of May, June, to Chippenham? What was life like there?
Well, there were national camps, and the food was reasonable, and the mess hall was reasonable, and there was a small naffy. Well, from memory, life was all right. We used to march up to the tank park was away from the camp. It was in a wood, hidden in the wood, and we used to march up to the tank park and do some maintenance on the tanks and march back for meals.
Would you do some maintenance as well?
Only gun cleaning and a bit of a tidy up around the turret and that sort of thing. Perhaps watch the driver doing something.
Now, what about the people in B Squadron? Who were the people you began to get to know? Your troop sergeant and
Mostly you got to know your own troop, you see, which was about 20-odd people.
Who were the characters that stood out?
Yeah.
Who's your officer?
Mr. Webster.
What was it? Lieutenant?
Lieutenant Peter Webster. For some reason, we called him Lily White.
What did you think of him? What was he like?
He was tall, thin, with glasses, and a bit wimpish, but keen and a earnest sort of keen, but to me, sort of wimpish, but I could be wrong.
Did he treat you well?
Yes. He insisted on a shaving when it was raining. We're out on the scheme, and you couldn't get inside the tank for camouflage nets and things like that. But he was all right.
And any other officers? Was Gilmore?
He was a squadron leader, Gilmore.
What were your impressions of him? I know you wouldn't have known him much, but what did you think of him?
Hardly saw him. Didn't know what to think of him. Didn't notice him because I didn't have the soil.
So who else was it? Troop sergeant?
Troop sergeant was this elderly sergeant who I can't remember his name. But after a bit...
You were in his tank then, so you were in the troop sergeant's tank?
Yeah, but after a while he left. I think he must have been too old for combat, I think, because he moved him away, and we didn't see him again, and we got a different sergeant, Sergeant Truscott.
What was he like?
Oh, he was... Very, very, he was about in his mid-20s, very keen, very officious, very keen, he was all right.
Were you in his tank again?
No, I wasn't in his tank then.
Do you know his tank, which corporal was
No, you see, at the end of these schemes, we moved to in June, 6th of June 1943, we moved to Bridlington, well, to Rudston near Bridlington, and they took the Crusaders off us and gave us Shermans. So things got changed a bit then.